Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is kind of a critical juncture in the show right now in the History of Germany podcast. So much stuff going on. If you ever thought about supporting us on Patreon or PayPal, now would definitely be the time to do it. You can find our support page on podcastnik.com. You can also just buy some stickers or t-shirts or whatever, books. We have some books and we're trying to work on more. We're trying to get so much stuff done, but we've just kind of hit a brick wall. Luckily, to save the day is we do have a sponsor, and so before we get started, let me give you a message from our sponsors and heroes. This episode was brought to you by Studio Headphones. Studio is trying to bridge that gap between awesome tech device with amazing sound, but that might be a little bulky, and that snazzy accessory that might not have the best sound. Basically, a minimalistic and fashionable design with emphasis on audio quality, which would compete with the highest rated headphones on the market, but at a much more reasonable cost. They let me pick out a pair. I chose the Vaza, and I can vouch for them. Great rich sound where you can really pick out the details of music. And Studio's a cool company, Swedish sleek Scandinavian design. They ship for free anywhere in the world. Plus, if you enter Alchemy as a discount code on their website, not only do you get a 15% discount, but that also lets them know that I sent you, and that helps this show. So give the site a look, studiosweden.com. The Bluetooth headset batteries last over 24 hours of active use, much better than my previous headphones, or a full week in standby mode. And they really do sound as good as they look. That code was Alchemy at studiosweden.com.
Greetings, hello, and good day in a new episode of Heirlooms, Objects from German History. I'm Judith Strusenberg.
And I'm Travis Dow. And today we'll take a look at one of the most important heirlooms of the history of Germany. A little hint, it has to do with the last couple episodes. It's a building. It's huge for its proportions. Since 1981, on the UNESCO list of World Cultural Heritage Sites, and it's a protected cultural property according to the Hague Convention.
Conrad II was only king for a few days when he made a large donation that marked the foundation of a challenging construction project. As an expression of his claim to power, and of course for religious reason, he wanted to build a church that surpassed in size and importance all the structures of his time. To say it in advance, he did, or rather, his successors did. The Cathedral of Speyer was the site of the largest cathedral in Christianity, a cathedral of unimaginable dimensions. Later, the Abbey of Cluny in France surpassed the cathedral in size, but after its destruction during a French Revolution, today the Speyer Cathedral is the largest surviving Romanesque church in the world. If you have never been to Speyer, you can take a virtual tour at kaiserdom-virtuell.de. But if you go to check that out now, then of course, come back so we can clarify exciting questions such as, why Speyer?
Today, Speyer has almost 50,000 inhabitants, but 1,000 years ago, Speyer was an insignificant and very clear diocese, which would not have played a big role either among the Ottonians or the Carolingians, meaning so there was no reason for them to emphasize the city before. And contemporaries kind of called Speyer a cow town. It's in the western central part of Germany, roughly speaking. It's in Baden-Württemberg. Wait, it's not in Baden-Württemberg. I keep saying
no,
it's in Baden-Württemberg.
It's in Rheinland-Pfalz.
It's in Rheinland-Pfalz. But back then, that was Franconian territory, I guess, because it was built in the Franconian dynasties. But today, it's... we'll also mention Goslar. It's not that far from Stuttgart. I don't want to... What are the closest cities? It's not that far from Copenhagen by American standards, but... or Moscow, dear. But... yeah. What are the closest cities around there?
It's close to Heidelberg. Heidelberg, do you... there are a lot of American tourists in Heidelberg because of Elvis.
There you go. Yeah. Is that where Elvis
okay,
was stationed?
It's really close to Heidelberg. Yeah.
Goslar isn't that far. Goslar was the other, we mentioned that other important town, and we'll mention it again, kind of as one of the capitals, maybe the capital, but Speyer was a diocese that the Ottonians and Carolingians before ignored. Ottonians were Saxon, so they completely ignored this part of Germany. Now it makes sense. Conrad II first gave a huge land grant.
I have read various speculations why Speyer became an important imperial seat. It seems plausible that Speyer is not only located in the Salic Heartland, but at the time it was also the last episcopal city that had not undergone any major expansion by any bishop or a king.
Yeah, so it was time. It was the last city. It was a good city that missed a cathedral. So
it was 1025 when the construction began. There is no document confirming the laying of the cornerstone exactly, but historians mean it's 1025. And up to its completion, a total of five generations of stonemasons, masons, carpenters, and countless craftsmen have built the cathedral. Yeah.
Five generations, by the way, which are basically the last five episodes. It's the whole dynasty. Took the whole dynasty to build this cathedral.
Yes.
Which, if you listen to the episodes in order, which Judith loves when I say that, but when you listen to the way you are supposed to listen to the history of Germany in order, then you know that we mentioned Speyer the last couple episodes.
Yes.
This really, for all the Heinrichs, 3rd, 4th, 5th, we also mentioned that we're going to do a special episode because... It did take a whole dynasty to build this thing, and it was kind of, it's kind of interesting that it's like it's they must have had this duty to finish this thing that Conrad II started. Conrad II, however, might have not had the foresight to see where it, to have the final vision of where it ended up under Henry V, let's say, because it just the construction started with the crypt hall. With a very kind of Roman-looking, this Romanesque columns and round arches and the alternating red and yellow sandstone blocks, this is a very famous thing I'm describing now. Like, many Germans have seen it in their lives on field trips and, destinations. But if you go to we'll have the website in the show notes. You can take the 360 tour virtually of this thing. But it's a very well-known crypt, kind of, this... yellow and red sandstone blocks and these, it counts as, that's why it's a UNESCO site. It's one of the most beautiful church crypts in the world. But remember that at this time, the kings traveled a lot. So it wasn't like he was moving the capital from Goslar to Speyer or one of the other towns to Speyer. He just started this project. And Conrad II maybe only saw the construction site twice in his whole life. And Henry III perhaps also. So Conrad died in Utrecht in 1039, and his remains were transferred to Speyer. So he was the first emperor to be laid at rest there. But it would continue on being built.
Investigation shows that there were already parts of the crypt and the altar house built by the death of Conrad. In a plain language, Conrad found his final resting place in the middle of a major construction site.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and therefore the emperor was buried in an iron-tipped stone sarcophag between the stairs of the yet unfinished pre-crypt. There were iron bands preventing the sarcophagus from being looted. Conrad's wife, Empress Gisela, who died in 1043, was buried alongside her husband. And yeah, originally there was a room for three sarcophagi, but the grave layout soon proved to be too small. It was extended twice until the death of the last Salian ruler, Henry V. And yeah, in this resting place, a whole dynasty was buried. According to Henry V, Frederick Barbarossa's second wife, Beatrix of Burgundy, was buried in a tomb with her daughter Agnes. Philip of Swabia, Rudolf von Habsburg, Adolf von Nassau, and Albrecht from Austria were buried there too.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a prestigious place to be buried if you're
of course, a
nobleman. Yeah. Boy, I was just reading a lot about, because they made new discoveries of Westminster in London. And it's in Westminster, there must be like thousands of people. You know, they have the Poets' Corner, the, you know, all kind of. But Germany doesn't really have that. This is more like, it really is more the Salian dynasty's like family crypt. And it was, and then afterwards, it was still, you know, a place as such. I mean, they were emperors for 100 years, so the, you know, the Salians is something you learn about in school in Germany, but it's not like they continued the tradition. The Habsburgs are buried somewhere else,
because Germany had never one central capital, but England had with London for like ever.
It's so interesting. I don't want to like go off topic, but because this is 1043, you know, and it was 1066, just a couple years later, when not William, but his son, I think, or grandson, or whoever it was, kind of beschlagnahmt. He took Westminster Abbey, made it a royal procession. And I was reading about all these special things about the fact that it's a royal cathedral, not an archbishop's cathedral. So it's not called a cathedral, it's called a abbey or whatever it is. I don't know. But, you know, it's like this really special thing. And it's the same time as the Speyer Dom. And I had the Speyer Dom in my head when I was reading it, but it's so different because because of what you just said, because it's in the middle of London. And then it doesn't matter if it went from, you know, to the Stuarts and to the Tudors. Every dynasty still had, you know, there was this symbolism behind Westminster. The old Anglo-Saxon capital, but Germany does not have that. You know, Berlin at this time, you know, so Speyer is a cow town. Berlin isn't even on the map. You know, Berlin doesn't even exist. Munich doesn't exist at this time. It's just, it's a totally different history and really, really interesting, I think. I think some cities did exist. So if Augsburg or Mainz or Köln, like Cologne, would have been made into big, important cities. Aachen, for instance, which was a capital under Charles the Great. Maybe if other emperors would have continued that, then maybe, you know, Germany would have a capital that goes back to Roman times, like Cologne or Augsburg. But no, instead they ruled on horseback, and there is no, Speyer is bigger than Westminster in some ways, but depending on how you measure it, but it's as old, the construction, but it's totally different, you know. So anyway, sorry, I don't want to get off, but it's just it's really, really, because I was reading about Westminster and just eating up every word because I knew about Speyer. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, totally different. Why is it so different? And of course, there's the Reformation, Henry VIII and all the thing in London that plays a big, you know, so there's other reasons. But yeah, anyways, so, you know, there's parallels. This is a dynastic crypt, But there's no poet's corner with hundreds of peoples buried next to generation, you know, hundreds of years of kings.
Yes.
So yeah, it's kind of it's neat. I like history. Yay.
I think we both do.
Yeah.
So let's tell a cool story about Henry III and his heart. Why he lost it in Goslar. You want to?
It's a weird story. Okay, this reminds me... Well, okay, I'll tell the story first, yeah? After the death of his father, Henry III, Henry the Fourth continued to build on the cathedral. Well, Henry III continued to. Henry the Fourth continued to. But Speyer is pretty close to Goslar. And Goslar was already an important city. We definitely mentioned Goslar before. It was kind of one of the favorite places of his empire. Henry III could not, upon his death, he could not decide whether he wanted to be buried in Goslar or Speyer. So he had his heart buried in Goslar and his body, the rest of his remains in Speyer. And that reminds me of, like, it's the same purpose of Pharaoh's pyramid in Egypt, you know, like you take out the organs, put them in jars, and then it just kind of reminds me of that. So you have this religious building built over a crypt, and that's your final resting place. Very, very interesting. But yeah, so Henry III is actually in both places. He couldn't make up his mind, so he's split. Mm-hmm.
Henry III died. And 5 years after his death in 1061, the cathedral was consecrated. His son, Henry IV, was just 11 years old at this time. Of course, this did not bring very much happiness to the young kids. For 1061, it's also the year in which Archbishop Anno abducted him from Kaiserswerth to Cologne.
Oh, yeah.
And exhorted from his mother his imperial insignia.
That was them. Just a couple episodes ago. One of the major dramatic events for Henry IV. You know, he was excommunicated like 3 times, had to walk on knees in a shirt to the... That was the investiture controversy and the walk to Canossa, all that. So, meanwhile, Speyer Dome is the cathedral in Speyer is keep on being built. While all this happened. So just was being consecrated when young Henry was kidnapped, all that stuff. But that was episode 47, just a couple episodes ago. Yep. Yeah, that's a great story. Poor Henry. Poor Henry IV.
I'm not pretty sure about this, but for the moment, yes. Even though the cathedral is now consecrated, its history remains exciting. Far-reaching alterations, fires, marauding soldiers, and archaeological excavations will come up. And yeah, for the moment, we would be very happy to hear about this podcast project. Do you enjoy listening to this? What objects from German history are there that we should take a closer look at? On Twitter, you can find me under the handle meet_Judith, and Travis is at podcastnick. After the cathedral was built ready, it remained only 20 years in its state, then Henry IV make it completely redesign. The nave receives a vaulted ceiling, and the outer walls are provided with glimpses and a continuous dwarf gallery. At the beginning of the 12th century, however, the construction work on the cathedral was really completed.
The cathedral, when it was finished, was dedicated to the benevolent, mild, and sweet Virgin Mary. For Henry IV, the construction project was not just a legacy of his forefathers or architectural hobby. It really, in addition to political power, this project demonstrated the religious power. Remember that the investiture controversy was going on? So this was really important symbolically in his dispute with Pope Gregory the Seventh at the time. And if you are listening to this out of order, then we've been discussing the investiture dispute in the last like 10 episodes. So seriously, so this you know, it's the biggest church in Christendom. Like it's, you know, it's bigger than what they had at the Vatican at the time. It's you know, it's not, this is not a coincidence, or this is not just like frivolous spending. He's trying to show that the emperor has real power, you know, real financial power, that can, real religious power, that they can build this. It's important to this emperor that was excommunicated three times to build the best church ever.
Yes, because of this did not help him. Yeah, when Henry IV died in 1106, he had just been excommunicated. Yeah. Again, so he, who had once pilgrimaged to Canossa to be liberated by the Pope of Excommunication Number 1, was buried in a still unseen chapel of the cathedral. So mm-hmm. sad.
And first, it was Henry V had to ask that, you know, ask for a pardon for his father. Yeah, Henry IV died in Liege. It was just like two episodes or three episodes ago, but yes. Yeah. Oh, geez. Yep. Couldn't even be buried in his own cathedral when he died. Yeah.
Not in a consecrated part. Yes. Yeah.
That was a fun emperor to research, Henry IV.
Oh, of course, yes. Really. So, Henry V to ask on the occasion of his coronation that his father was brought to the tomb of his ancestors. It's a little bit funny because it has been Henry V who has brought down his father, arrested him, and even fought him on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Tricked him, trapped him. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. But finally, yep, the Speyer crypt is important to them. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm.
So I would say from the Middle Ages, we jump in early modern period. We are now at the night of the 5th to 6th May 1450, the cathedral burned down completely, causing a huge damage. More than 300,000 guilders are mentioned. Pope Nicholas V granted in March 1451 a five-month indulgence, and in March 1452 again a 3-month indulgence to finance the reconstruction of the cathedral. At the next dramatic event, the citizens of Speyer were just visiting the cathedral to protect themselves and their belongings from fire. What happened then, Travis?
Yeah, so another couple hundred years in the future to the 28th of September, 1688, during the Palatine War of Succession, which involved French troops. This was the French general Montclair finally announced that he had the order to destroy the entire city except the cathedral, which allowed the Speyer citizens to take anything they can carry, including furniture, household goods, anything they could manage to get inside the cathedral. And in fact, they did that, and they piled everything several feet high within the cathedral. And then on the 31st of May, 1689, the city was lit on fire and burned for days. And then the fire raged for a couple of days until finally in the night of June 2nd, it even attacked the poorly accessible eastern dome of the cathedral. And the chaos was then used by the French soldiers to loot even more, and including the upper imperial royal tombs. The tombs of the Salians were spared, except for the tomb of Henry V, as all the rest lay deeper in the ground. And the soldiers were just kind of, you know, they left in a hurry and only looted the top few tombs. We know this because of an excavation that happened in 1900, and we already mentioned that too on one of the episodes, because we mentioned that, let me see, Henry IV was 6 foot tall and was missing some teeth, because of this excavation in 1900. So they found out that the French also didn't get that far. But that was, 1689. It was partially on fire again and looted. And this event changed the appearance of the cathedral again. So if looking at it after then, did not look like the original 12th century building, because the great heat of the fire, the vault in the nave became fragile and partially collapsed. And the eastern part was okay, basically. And for a long time, almost a century, the east one part was closed for worship. So when they rebuilt Speyer, it took them a while to rebuild the cathedral.
Yes, until the second half of the 18th century. Then there was enough money to rebuild the western part of the cathedral, which was collapsed. And under a German architect, Franz Ignaz Michael Neumann, the son of the famous Baroque master builder Balthasar Neumann, the gap in the western part of the nave was closed in its original form in 1772 until 1778. They almost completely worn Westwerk got a contemporary Baroque facade.
Just in time?
Oh, yes, just in time.
Yeah, if you're reading the dates, 1772, 1778, that's not far from the French Revolution. So,
yes.
And here they come again, basically.
In 1794, it was devastated again by French revolutionary troops. The cathedral was profaned with the entire interior lost. In place of the portrait of Virgin Mary, there were stalls and kettles, and it was used as a material storage.
I guess Speyer went back to its roots as a cow town, and I think that's a sad chapter. Yeah, the French really kind of disrespected that. In fact, that was almost the end of the Speyer Dome. At that point, it was 800 years old, and it was almost, the French would have let it completely fall apart if not the Bishop of Mainz had not stepped in. 1806, it was actually slated for demolition, and the bishop had to intervene directly with Napoleon, and Napoleon stepped in and said it was and allowed to be preserved. Now, okay, why Napoleon? Because, okay, the French troops were there. That's a hint. But after the Peace of Luneville on February 9th, 1801, the left bank of the Rhine was occupied by France. It fell to the French. And that includes Speyer Cathedral. So Speyer Cathedral was under the jurisdiction of the French government and therefore Napoleon. I don't think the Heinrichs liked that very much would have liked that very much. Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
But Napoleon did have to step, and he did.
He was the one who said that they the cathedral should be demolished.
He was going to demolish it. Okay, so the Bishop of Mainz is really the hero.
Afterwards, he said, "Okay, keep your church."
Yeah,
but first, then he wanted to demolish it. Yes.
Yeah.
So it was his Napoleon's wife and the French minister of culture who came up and with the Archbishop of Speyer and said, "Okay." Come on, it's cultural significant and can't be destroyed.
Oh yeah, because someone wanted to convert the site into a triumphal arch, which sounds very Napoleonic. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay, that makes sense. That's funny. But in any case, so Napoleon does not tear it down, and Napoleon is defeated in 1817, 200 years ago. Again, the Germans decided it had a lot of historic significance, and building continued again.
And at this point, we meet Ludwig I, King of Bavaria again. You know him from the Zero episode of Heirloom, the one with the Siegestor. He liked the Speyer Dome very much. And so he gave a lot of money to rebuild the cathedral.
Yeah, for those of you that do not know Ludwig the First and you don't know what the Siegestor is because you missed that episode, you do know him as the founder of, it's his fault that we have Oktoberfest in Munich, okay? And all our American listeners went, oh, okay. Yes, that Ludwig of Bavaria.
Yes.
Exactly. That was the important part. Anyways, yeah. I mean, I grew up in Munich, so he's very, very known. Like, everything is kind of points to Ludwig the First in Munich.
And, yes.
But also, the Speyer Dome owes a lot to him.
So then, again, the cathedral was rebuilt in 1854 to 1858. The western part was rebuilt in neo-Romanesque style. The architect was Heinrich Hübsch, one of the most renowned representatives of early historism. He oriented himself freely on the original western building by taking center tower and two smaller flank towers, but deviated significantly from the template in both the choice of material as well as the proportions considerably.
Yeah, that's interesting. So in the 19th century, they weren't after accuracy, but they were kind of more, especially the this is after Ludwig II, but like the very romantic idea of the Middle Ages and 1850s. That's, you know, perfectly for when they were looking back, going, you know, saying, oh, when Germany was, you know, when the Heinrichs were ruling and kind of, you know, romantically looking back at the nationalistic times. And this was one of those buildings, like, definitely. So they built it even bigger, if anything. But kind of in the same style, you know, neo. So before was Romanesque, which is copying Roman, and this is neo-Romanesque. So it's a copy of a copy of a copy that's supposed to look, you know, very majestic and kind of Roman with the pillars and arches and everything. So, but again, you can look at it at that website we mentioned. Hold on, I'll mention it one more time. It was Kaiserdom, KAISERDOM, virtual in German, so virtuell.de, kaiserdom-virtuel.de, because you can just like scan around and look at all of it. So that's about now, it's almost to the point where you can, that's actually what you're looking at is the final kind of reparations in the 19th and even 20th centuries. Really, you're not looking at a 11th century building. But yeah, so that's what neo-Romanesque looks like. That's the Speyer Dome.
In the years 1900 to 1906, an excavation campaign was carried out in the cathedral. The royal and imperial tombs were opened and housed in a new and accessible imperial crypt where you can find them still today. Yeah, findings from the tombs can today be admired at the Historical Museum of the Palatine. For example, the tomb of Empress Gisela or the orb of Henry III. You also gained a lot more insight, for example, about the appearance of the rulers. Yeah, it's what you said before, the look of Henry IV. For example, due to the climate of the grave lay, many of the textiles were preserved. This is very interesting, I think. This was packed and stored more than a century, partly unnoticed in depots until a detailed research project dealt with the textiles. There's a short video that shows photos of the excavation as well as the vestments of the ruler. I think we could pack this in the show notes too.
We'll try. I'll try to remember.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll find it. It is kind of cool. It's because it's a glimpse of the 11th century, which is, you know, right when the Crusade starts. There's a lot happening in that time. It's the same time as like the Norman invasions of England. So I think I'm a history nerd, I know, but the burial orb of Henry III, I'm just thinking here like, oh, I would go see that right now. Let's go to Speyer. But yeah, you can see all that online, at least if you can't make it to Rheinland-Pfalz anytime soon. I wish I could just go down the Rhine for for a summer and just look at all these things. But
so yeah. After a century after the construction of Ludwig I, it was again built on the cathedral. The paintings, which were made in the 19th century, were removed during a renovation in 1957 until 1961, along with a plaster, and are therefore preserved. And I think they're in a museum too. Brittle sandstone pillars were reinforced by cement injections. Mm-hmm. And the gables of the transept and the choir, which were removed in the Baroque period, were restored after engravings and preserved examples of related buildings, which means they tried to make it more Roman again. Not mm-hmm. neo-Roman, but more 12th century look-alike.
Mm-hmm. Romanesque. Even then, it's Romanesque, not... Romanesque,
yes.
It's like what the Middle Ages people thought the Romans looked like, instead of what the 19th century, like Victorian people thought the Romans looked like. But yeah, it's more along with what the Zalia wanted. So kind of interesting, yeah.
Yes. So like every other building, the Speyer Cathedral needs ongoing measures to maintain the structures. For example, in last year in 2017, the Afra Kapelle was extensively renovated. This is the chapel in which Henry IV was buried after his death until 1111, mm-hmm. when he was still brought into the official family grave line.
Yeah, so the old excommunicated. Yeah, so the grave when he was still excommunicated or something like that. Yeah. And despite all the destructions and changes that have taken place over the centuries, over the last 1,000 years, really, all the reinterpretations and alterations, the Speyer Cathedral, once the largest building in the Christian world, is an impressive monument of Romanesque architecture and a unique testimony to medieval ideas and the Salian's most important material legacy, like their final resting place. And don't forget, we have a new version of the history of Germany, which is the German version always existed, Geschichte der Deutschen, but now we also have Tarich Alemannia, if I'm saying that correctly, which is the Arabic version. And we don't really have a good way of getting the word out. So History of Germany exists in Arabic. Please, please help us spread the word. There's links on podcastnik.com. You can subscribe to the RSS feed. And you might be able to find it on iTunes, but we were told it's not probably going to be findable. So help us get the word out. Follow at @HG_Arabic for the history of, if you happen to speak Arabic. But at least, yeah, that's HG, stimmt das? Oder HG, yeah, HG_Arabic, and, you know, help us spread the word on Twitter and Facebook and any way you can. If you know anybody that's living in Germany and you know, speaks Arabic and wants to know more about German history, then, help us out.
For this episode, we say goodbye. Have a nice day, evening, morning. Whenever you've listened to us, and see you next time with heirlooms, objects from German history. Bye.
Guten Tag, liebe Frau. Es hat mich sehr gefreut.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.